Thanks for downloading this IMSA Radio podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be broadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by visiting IMSAradio.com or search for IMSA Radio wherever they get their podcasts.
Another 20 minutes to go for Bruce and I for the remainder of our segment, and then we will welcome back into the Haggerty broadcast booth John Hindhoff and Jeremy Shaw. Cycle through a few of our other pit lane reporters as well. Shay Adam and Joe Bradley stepping back into the fold, but sterling work done so far by at Pit Lane Andy, still being found on Twitter there with that instantly recognisable handle. And great to have Andrew Marriott pounding the pit lane once again here at Daytona for the Radio Show Limited Network. The Flexbox-sponsored 54 car running second in LMP3 heads off the infield segment and up to Speedway Turn 1. So that is Nick Johnson driving the 54 car from Core Autosport. George Kurtz, Colin Brown, John Bennett are the other drivers there. Johnson seems to have been doing, maybe it's just that his shifts have coincided with ours, but he does seem to be at the wheel for an awful lot of the time behind the wheel of that LMP3 car. The 13th lap currently for the Swede. He did a 25 lap stint prior to that and a 31 lap stint before that as well. So this is halfway through a triple currently.
Well, again, when you have that level of experience all the years, particularly racing with Crone Racing, he can do it metronomically.
Yeah,
of course, not that much experience in P3 class cars, but you know, he's a driver of a calibre that's more than enough to cope with those. But it's very sort of spread out in P3. Yes, we've got three cars on the lead lap in the class, which is Felipe Fraga leading by nearly 50 seconds from Nick Johnson. That's going to be quite hard, but almost impossible in the final 3 hours to chip it away. But likewise, Johnson, even though he's being caught bit by bit by the driver third in class, which is the car 33. Which is the Sean Creech Motorsport entry. João Barbosa at the wheel. God, there's a driver with an immense amount of experience here as well. A former winner, I'm fairly sure, if I go back through my records of the Daytona 24 Hours. But he's 30-something seconds in the rear, so you feel there's unlikely to be a lot of change. But you simply never know, do you?
I would say several-time winner Barbosa, but...
I want to do the numbers three times. Let's try 2014. I didn't want to pluck them out of the air. 2015 and 2018. Okay. Action Express, where he shared that one in 2018 with Philippe Albuquerque and a certain Christian Fittipaldi, who we almost spoke to earlier in the race, who retired back in 2019. That was his final one. So three wins.
That's so impressive. Three wins in 5 years, that is, as well. Yep. So a real sweet spot for the Portuguese in the mid-2010s. As through the kink on the infield, the Konica Minolta Acura now in the hands of Phil, still in the hands of Philly Barbaker, running in third position, 136.0, his average lap time over 13 laps, but he got as low as a 134.8. Really, Pipo Derani's best lap on his stint, and Albuquerque's. They're separated, would you believe, by 0.03 of a second in terms of best laps this particular stint. But quicker than both of them has been Loic Duval. And that is repeated on the averages. He's a low 135, is Loic Duval. And opening up that gap to very nearly 10 seconds. Another second and a half and he will be there after 666 laps, very nearly. Still on course, I reckon, to be north of 750 because, well, this is helped by the fact that we haven't had much caution lately. 759 is the new predicted race distance. That means 93 laps to go, but it is very, very difficult to actually lay that down in stone because so much could happen between now and the end of the race. A rear screen-less Aston Martin heading down the back straight.
Yeah, that's the Magnus Racing entry, the Aston Martin, Spencer Pompelli at the wheel, but the bodywork's a little tattered. The right rear corner, there's obviously been contact. Hey, you're in a 24-hour race with 61 cars, there will be contact. But the rear screen, it's not the only car we've seen missing the screen. What was the other one? Was it the Gilbert Courtauld Mercedes? No, it wasn't. It was one of the McLarens. I'm starting to get a bit of a haze here, but it's amazing how many times in racing you suddenly find a car that looks slightly different. You can't work out for a while, and you suddenly think, oh, there's no light glinting off the rear of the car. The screen has gone. And that's the case for the Magnus Aston Martin. Be a little lighter, but a bit blowy and bored.
Well, I was going to say, if it was one of the very warm years here at the Daytona 24, you might be grateful for that. But with temperature figures that felt like minus four overnight, they would have dearly hoped that that screen had stayed part of the car. But unfortunately, it was as a result of a spin at the Le Mans chicane, which then pitched the car backwards into the tyre wall on driver's left and popped the screen out from its mountings. It did stay part of the car, I think, for the remainder of that stint, and maybe the team just elected to take it out because there was always the risk that it would pop out and into the face of somebody else. So the mechanical warning flag, I'm sure, was being flown in its direction, and purely before an incident more serious happened, prevent that by taking the screen out entirely. And it's just too much long-winded work to try and fit a new one. You could, as I've seen many times where cars' door screens have gone, just, I suppose, wrap the whole thing in a black plastic bag, but that doesn't really help you a great deal. And again, that's a lot of work to be done with some tank tape too. Now, I haven't heard much about the Lexus cars run by Vassar Sullivan of late. One very neatly positioned in fourth spot in the hands of Ben Barnacote. Let's put that right and head to pit lane, Andy.
Yeah, well, I've got Frankie Montecalvo down here. Now, one of your cars going well, the other not so well.
Yeah, we had some trouble early on in the race. Kind of got caught out with the car that spun in front of us, but it's the name of the game, trying to stay out of trouble, and it just didn't work out for us. But guys got the car back out there, put back together perfectly, which kind of shows we would have been competitive in the end if we didn't have that problem. But other than that, we've been running great, and we're just going to, you know, I think we worked back up to P15 from the back, so it's where I think we're going to settle in for the end of the race, but...
After racing Ferraris, you sort of settled in here, because I think you've been at this team, this is your third season now, Frankie.
Yeah, it's been great being with the Lexus and Vassar Sullivan family. Been here for 4 years now. This will be my fourth consecutive season and plan to have many more.
I saw you got a new sponsor, an executive jet company. That sounds a pretty good deal.
Oh, yeah, it definitely helps out getting to all the racetracks.
There's nothing like travelling on an executive jet, is there? I've only done it a few times.
Oh, it's a lot faster getting there, that's for sure. I think some of the cruising speeds are up to 600 plus miles an hour, so it gets you there in time.
Frankie, great to see you again.
Good to see you. Thanks.
Worked with Frankie back in Europe a few years ago.
From Vassar Sullivan, and as Andrew quite rightly says, one car neatly placed in fourth position. Ben Barnacote, who's proven to be a real star so far this weekend. 147.9 is not quite as quick as the three cars ahead, but it might be that that car is slightly heavier on fuel. When did Barnacote last pit? 12 laps ago. Collado, 21 laps ago. So it's Collado's car that is the lightest, with Dennis Olsen and Matt Campbell the next lightest. Back to Vassar Sullivan we go with Andrew Marriott.
Yeah, I'm back with a rising star of IndyCar racing, Kyle Kirkwood. How are you enjoying this long-distance racing car? A bit different for you.
Yeah, it's going super well. You know, last year we didn't have the best finish. We had to end it kind of early where we went laps down in the middle of the race. And right now we're on the lead lap in the RCF GT3 Lexus. So we couldn't ask for anything more right now. All we got to do is kind of just keep our nose clean, and we're looking at kind of third or fourth on strategy. But everyone knows, I mean, there's still about 3 hours to go, so anything could happen from this point on, and it's a sprint race.
My old friend and colleague Jeremy Shaw's been singing your praises to me, actually.
Yeah, Jeremy is awesome, dude. Is he up in the booth right now?
He's just going in a minute.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yeah. Jeremy's watched me come up as a young driver in Formula Cars, and he's always been around every single series, and it's cool to be in a series racing where he's announcing.
What about your IndyCar season coming up? Just tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, so I'll be racing AJ Foyt's number 14 Rocket Chevrolet in the full IndyCar season, so the 17 races. So this is a nice race to kick off the 2022 season for me, because that will be my full-time gig. And right now, actually, Jack Hawksworth, who's about to get into the car here in just a few moments, raced for AJ Foyt a couple of years back. So we've got a lot of similarities here with the team and Lexus, and they're also are an IndyCar team as well. So there's a lot of similarities, and it's a good way to just kick off the 2022 season.
Oh, thanks very much. Pleasure to meet you, sir.
Likewise.
Yeah, Kyle, part of Team USA, run by Jeremy Shaw. I remember meeting Kyle in the UK in 2016, I think, ahead of him running at the Walter Hayes Trophy at Silverstone and the Formula Ford Festival at Brands Hatch. So many have been on that track through the years. Still only 23 years old and racing in his home state this weekend from Jupiter in Florida, and was in an Indy Lights champion last season. So his season going from strength to his career going from strength to strength.
Well, in my very old-fashioned notes, if something's marked up in bold, it means he's won a championship. And look at Kyle's record.
Yes.
2017 F4 USA champion, 2018 USF 2000 champion and Formula 3 America's champion, 2019 Indy Pro 2000 champion, 2021 Indy Lights champion. My big question is, what happened in 2020? The run was broken, but that's the sort of record you look for. You can only beat those around you, but if you do it consistently and you're stepping up the ladder. But apparently in 2020 he got a bye, not a bye he wanted. It was because of COVID, it didn't get to race, but that therefore is even more impressive. The series didn't happen in 2020, but again, remarkable driver working his way up the order. And again, I like the chopping and changing where they get to play seriously in sports cars as well as in single seaters. And you know, you could say they'll wait to see which one works better for them, but I have a feeling either of those are going to work for Kyle. He's that level of talent. And again, just pick up, I worked with Jeremy Shaw right from the moment to the end of 1983 when I mistakenly, instead of having a real career, I had a pretend career, the one I'm still doing now, joined Autosport magazine. And Jeremy, I'd read his stuff for years and it was great to work alongside him. But what he's done since 30 plus years ago, coming over to the United States for younger single-seater yeah. racers, has been phenomenal. And duly rewarded this weekend. Accolades at last for Jeremy. He'll be most bashful about it, but he really does deserve so many drivers over generations now, effectively. Come over, try it in Europe, and then let's see where you go from there. It's been great.
You're only saying that because he's listening, of course.
No, he's not.
And he's on in 7 minutes.
No, I'd say that anyhow. I'd shout it out the window.
You can't really say for Kyle Kirkwood that 2020 didn't happen, because he just so happened to take part in the Sebring 12 Hours and Petit Le Mans with Vassar Sullivan, along with four IMSA Prototype Challenge races too.
So, yeah, but there was no single-seater career.
There wasn't a championship in there, but for understandable reasons. Quite a lot happened for all of us in 2020. Mustang sampling number 5 car is in. Loic Duval, a really superior stint for the Frenchman, and a report from that end of the pit lane from Andrew.
Yeah, well, you know, Pippo Durrani I've known for a long time, since he did Formula 3, and he's always such a friendly chap. The pressure must be really getting to him, because he's just waved me away from an interview, which he's never done in the past, so I think there's a lot of pressure down here.
Well, understandably so, because this is getting more and more intense with every lap. It's nearly at boiling point, and we've still got 2¾ hours to go, so not quite simmering over just yet, but Loic Duval under stern pressure. Remember, the previous double stint that Richard Westbrook did, they did use the same tyres for that second Westy stint, so he was on the ragged edge. Let's just have a look at the times for Loic in the number 5 car. He was quicker across a 22-lap stint than his first effort. So they certainly did not double stint tyres for the number 5 car that time around. The pain that Richard Westbrook had to go through, he said, just struggled to keep the car on the black stuff. That will pay dividends, is the theory, later on. So they take short-term pain for long-term gain and the run to the flag.
You were just talking there about warming up the tyres, but you can also warm up the drivers. And Simon Pagenaud's just posted a little tweet. Out of the car, now warming up by my fireplace and my RV. How posh is that? It looks fantastic. Of course, watching what my teammates do, what they do, but I had no idea RVs could be so luxurious.
Another couple of laps. Philippe Albuquerque should be down pit road. Three laps later for Tom Blomqvist, I reckon. Pippo Durrani has already brought the number 31 car in that we mentioned at the time, and that was taken over by Mike Conway once again. So what we haven't had for a little while is a Tristan Nunez stint. Did Durrani do a triple? Yes, he did. And before that, it was a Conway couple, I reckon. So Tristan Nunez in the 31 car, not been in for a little while. They hand the car back again to the British Toyota FIA World Endurance Championship racer. and he certainly wasn't hanging around in his previous double stint, as out of the Western Horseshoe will go the 0-1. I reckon it's the engine you can hear in the background. Sadly, neither of these two Cadillac racing cars, the V Performance Academy and the Cadillac Accessories cars, are in the hunt for the overall win. 0-1 and 0-2 hitting major difficulties overnight, which has heavily delayed these cars. Marcus Ericsson in 0-2 is running in 14th. Renge van der Zander in the 0-1 in 20th position, still with five LMP3 cars ahead of him on the timing screen.
Under 2.75 hours in this race remain. Johnny, we've nearly come to the end of our time. We're going to have to relinquish the microphone to two people who I'm sure are champing at the bit to get in. John Hindhoff, who's, as we joked, probably wearing shorts and a singlet, but I think even John, with his hardy nature and his northeastern upbringing, will be wearing a little bit more than that. It's still cold. It might be bright and sunny, but it's been a fantastic race. I've thoroughly enjoyed it thus far. But as we've seen, it's now the sharp end of the race. This is where any problems you've been nursing are really, really going to hurt. And now we've got 0-1 into the pit lane, but it's not their race, as you pointed out. Renge van der Zander brought it in, the Cadillac Racing 0-1, but up front it's the number 10 Philippe Albuquerque driven car entered from the Wayne Taylor Racing stable. It's an Acura leading, but only by under 2 seconds from another Acura. It's the number 60 of Meyer Shank Racing. They seem to have the upper hand at the moment. Can the Cadillacs fight back?
Well, Albuquerque should be in at the end of this lap number 674. Blomqvist therefore should have a lap to enjoy as the lead car for Meyer Shank Racing before he also ducks into the pit lane for another lot of fuel. 22 laps generally is the marker currently. Dirani did do 21 laps. It's his middle stint of the trio that he did just before handing over to Mike Conway. Pato O'Ward has given up the number 81 car to Colton Herter, and Herter settling in for a 20-lap stint as well. And to make sure you're in tune as we reach the end of another clock hour with what's happening in the GT Daytona classes, two of them, remember, this year. Dennis Olsen piloting the number 2 KCMG Porsche, leading the way, but only by 2.2 seconds from Matt Campbell in the 9 Pfaff Motorsports plaid Porsche. Then it's James Collado in the 62, 17.8 seconds back, and a further half minute adrift is Ben Barnacote in the best of the Lexus RCFs. Let's get a final word as Bruce and Johnny are about to come to an end from Andrew Marriott down in the pits.
Yeah, me too. I feel like one of those drivers whose car's probably in the lead but has done his last stint. I'm just going to watch the end of it. But had a great fun down here in the pit lane. And yeah, it's been cold, it's been challenging. I've never seen so much traffic behind the pit boxes. There's a constant load of golf carts with fuel on them, with tyres on them, gas bottles. You constantly dodge. It doesn't matter if you're on the actual pit apron itself or behind the pits. It's so busy. But it's been a great return, I think, to the Daytona 24 for us big group here at Radio Le Mans. A terrific time. I'm going to hand you over now to my favourite ex-cop. It's Joseph Bradley.
I'm tempted to say, how many ex-cops do you know, Andrew? Andrew Marriott finishing his stint down in the pit lane. Brilliant from Mariotti. Thumbs up from all of us up here. He's got the energy and the engine of several of us. I'm not sure that homologation should still be allowed after all these years. I'm not sure where his balance of performance have come from, but he's putting the rest of us in the shade. And the book will be out shortly. We'll keep you in touch with that and IMSA Radio and Radio Short Limited. Raft of pit stops, including at the time Philippe Albuquerque, who came in from the lead, Jeremy Shaw.
Yeah, he did, and this previous stint, number 5 car was leading from number 31, from number 10, from number 60. There was 8 seconds between the number 5 and number 31. We're just waiting. Oh, now into the pits is the Tom Blomqvist, just making his next stop right on schedule. That was a 22-lap stint for the number 60 car, which is about whatever all of the leaders are running at this stage. All of the last stint for each of the top four cars that are on the lead lap was a 32 lap stint. So we'll just wait and see where things stabilize once the number 60 car with Tom Blomqvist at the wheel gets up to speed again. He was running in the fourth position and just running exactly the same speed as the number 10 that was ahead of him. So the two Acuras in third and fourth before this round of pit stops, running about a second apart, yeah. John, for pretty much that whole last stint.
Yeah, been sunshine ever since the sun came up at 7:15. A little bit of a whoopsie at the Le Mans chicane. We've got the sun in our eyes again.
P3 car.
It was the
Andretti
36, I think, Jeremy. Yes, it was. They've been fighting way through and then have dropped off a little bit. Well, now in Rasmus Linden, fifth position, a couple of laps off the lead.
Yeah, four or five laps off the lead. And yeah, I think they've fought hard. They had some problems, as you say, earlier on.
Came back from those electrical issues.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's the nature of this race. Yeah. It absolutely is. 2 hours and 38 minutes to go. Hagerty Global Broadcast Centre for Jeremy Shaw and John Heintorf. And from the freezing temperatures, hovering just above freezing overnight, and the track temperature the same. Track temp now up to 25 Celsius. We've had sunshine on the track since, well, just after 7 o'clock. The air temperature hasn't moved that much, but it's up to 8 Celsius, so a little bit over 40 degrees in the Fahrenheit scale. It will feel cooler outside because there's still a little bit of wind blowing. All the flags at the International Horseshoe aren't as perpendicular to their flagpoles as they were earlier in the week. But this is the run to the finish now.
Yeah.
Porsche keys to the race. We are now into the run. If you haven't already started, well, they will have. Everybody will be back timing from the back of the race, the end of the race now, Jeremy, and that's where the strategy is right now.
Indeed, so we're inside the distance now of a regular season IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship event, which is 2 hours 40 minutes. We've got 2 hours 37 to go in GTD in 26th place overall. The number 16, Wright Motorsports, that teal and black car, it leads the way, as it has done for a pretty large portion, certainly of the morning hours here now. And that was a championship winning car in the Michelin Endurance Cup last year. Jacko Robichaud at the wheel of that Wright Motorsports car at the moment. He leads Nicholas Nielsen in number 21 AF Corsa Ferrari by a goodly margin at the moment. He's got about 15. He had about 15 seconds, about 47 seconds over him the last time I looked, about three or four laps ago. In the GTD Pro, in the 21st position overall, Dennis Olsen, also in a Porsche. That car for KCMG leads the way from the other Porsche of Pfaff Motorsports by virtually nose to tail. And then about 50 seconds behind in third position, the Lexus of Ben Barnicot, John.
Let's go to the top three and the battle for LMP3. Sean Creech Motorsport have been there or thereabouts for the whole race. Good morning, Joe Bradley.
Good morning, guys. And quite aptly, the number 33 is running third in LMP3. It's all the threes for João Barbosa. João, you've just gotten out of the car. Is that your job done for the day?
We'll see. Maybe not. Maybe I'll still get in the car for one last time. No, but it's been going really well. We just need a yellow to try and make that lap back. We're a lap down, and we just need a little bit of luck at this point to catch up to the leaders, because the pace is really good. Sean Creech guys have done a great job, and everybody's doing a good job, so we just need a little bit of luck now.
And I've just been told our good friend Martin Short is listening in, so you might want to say hello.
Yeah, we changed some messages late last night, so he was having a good time drinking some wine and watching the race.
That's what he does now. Can I ask you about the LMP3 car as a class and what it's like to drive? I mean, you're very experienced. You've driven, I think, pretty much everything in this class-wise in this race. What's the LMP3 like to drive?
It's a great car to drive. It's really fun to drive. Obviously, when you compare it to the faster cars, DPI, it's the brakes, power, and aero. You know, it just does everything a little bit slower, but they're really, really good fun to drive. And very competitive class with a lot of good teams as well and good drivers. So it's been a lot of fun.
It's very competitive. It's going to be a race to the flag, Joe. Wish you all the very best, mate, and we'll speak to you at the end, hopefully.
Thank you very much.
Magnificent talent. Joao Barbosa, what a career he's had. Talent spotted by Martin Short of Rural Centre, who was celebrating over the weekend with a few friends around. Tuned in this morning. Hello, Martin. Hello, Michelle. I'm not saying anything else to Michelle. She's another Sunderland supporter. It was a dark day for us yesterday. Also, have to say hello to Tiffany Dell. Hello, Tiff. Thank you very much for the kind words, for the coverage through the nighttime hours. About time we saw you back over here. And you must be a bronze driver by now, Tiff. He knows.
Well, you can't answer back either.
No,
can you
can't. For once, I've shared stages and microphones with Tiff. He has great pleasure in calling me Geordie John, which he knows winds me up because I'm from Sunderland, not Newcastle. Thank you, Tiff, for the very kind tweet. And I think you're right. This is going to be a cracker in the last couple of hours. And you're welcome with us anytime. If you're at the racetrack where we are, we'd love to have you in the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre. So 2.5 hours, as mentioned, at IMSA Radio for the run to the flag. Thanks to Johnny Palmer and Bruce Jones for their contribution, and to Andrew Marriott. It'll be Joan Shea, Jeremy and me to the end of the race. Peter Mackay also joining the team here. Swatted up for 3 years to do that. I've got no idea how he crammed all that information in such a short time. Brilliant stuff from PMAC. Safe travels to all heading back. Some great people here this weekend. It's been old friends and made some new ones as well. Jeremy, yeah. Brilliant being back at the track.
I've met
at this place particularly. Actually.
Absolutely, I've caught up with all sorts of friends. I mean, I haven't seen anybody in this paddock basically for a couple of years, and met a whole bunch of really interesting new people as well.
Is it like me that it's as if we've never been away though? I mean, that's the measure of this paddock, yeah. But I almost feel like I've picked up conversations that I left 2 years ago to the day.
Well, that's right, and many people down there, I mean, they know they haven't seen us around, but they all
still heard us.
And they thought they didn't know we'd be doing it from home.
I've had that so many so many times. Oh, but you were at Petit, weren't you?
No.
Well, congratulations to our tech boards for making that happen. They've worked really hard at the track at NASCAR Productions, Tim Gray and his team in London.
So just a quick note here on LMP3. It's number 74 car that still leads, as it has been doing for quite a long way. The number 54 car, however, was around about 40 seconds behind. Maybe it slipped to 50 in the last stint. It's now a lap behind. I think that car was in the pits a couple of laps ago. And I think it must have spent a bit more time on the pit lane than was usual, because it's now coming within the grasp of Malthe Jakobsen, who's only 3 seconds behind Colin Brown. So Colin Brown in number 54 car for Court Order Sport in second position in LMP2, a lap behind the number 74, as I just said. And the number 33 car for Sean Creech Motorsports, that is the car that Gerard Barbosa recently vacated, is now just 2.5 seconds behind Colin Brown. So Malthe Jakobsen, the youngster, chasing Colin Brown.
It's a good point you bring up there, Jeremy. Top four overall and in DPI, all still in the same lap and within, 20 seconds of each other. LMP2, we've got Colton Herter and Dragon Speed. Are they now a full lap ahead, Jeremy, of the battle for second? Ferdy and Nico Lapierre. So they're still on the same lap.
Yeah.
Same lap as well.
Yeah. There's about almost half a minute between the number 81 of Colton Herter and Ferdy Habsburg. Yeah. That gap's been the same now for the last basically couple of hours. And the number 52 car is similar margin behind. It's the car that started from the pole position. Has slipped back a little bit over the course of the last stint. I think the last time I looked, it was about 47 seconds behind the second place car in third.
And as far as the lead in GTD Pro, well, that's barely a couple of Porsche's lengths between Dennis Alton for KCMG and Matt Campbell for Pfaff Motorsport, with Ben Barnicot just about a minute, I think, further back behind. Half a second between the two Porsches. They're on the high banks at the moment. That KCMG car glinting in the almost noon sunshine, just after 11 o'clock in the morning here. 2.5 hours to go. So significant places in all of the classes. If we go to GTD quickly, there's about, well, there's under a minute between Zachary Robichon, and it's only 45 seconds actually between him and Nicholas Nielsen in the AF Corsa. So Wright Motorsports Porsche versus the AF Corsa Ferrari. And about another minute further back, Spencer Pumpelly in the Aston Martin Vantage for Magnus Racing, their first time with the Vantage. So they're still all in with a shout. Podium positions for the moment, but which podium spot, what step on the box, still very much up for grabs here. You get the feeling now that the ante has been upped. It's going to take more than just a few dollars for the buy-in on this one. If you've got anything left in the fast draw, new tyres left, oh yes please, we'll have them to the end of the race. Driver who's feeling fresh and ready to go, time to go and wake him up, slap him around with some raw meat and say bad things about his family, get him out there. We need everything we've got now, because these are the last couple of hours, 2.5 hours to go. So what, 120, 150 minutes or thereabouts to find out who gets the watches later on today.
Yeah, and we won't be using any new tyres now. I think you can safely say until the end of the race it'll be perhaps just barely scrubbed tyres or brand new tyres to go all the way for all the leading contenders in each of the classes from here. So overall, Richard Westbrook leads now for Mustang Sampling and JDC Miller Motorsports by 18
Jeremy,
seconds
side
over
by
a three-car battle for second place.
Yeah, and the number 10 car is going to lose that in a moment or two. Has lost it. Albuquerque just making a tiny mistake going into turn six, and a pounce from Mike Conway, the move of a Le Mans winner and a world champion. But the Acura comes on the high side down towards the Le Mans chicane, and almost a touch there as they dice for position, and little bit of a block move there by Philippe Albuquerque. Conway was wise to it, had to jink to the left there.
Fascinating to see that. The Cadillac gets off the corner really well, but the Acura is a little bit quicker
at the end
of the back straight.
Yeah.
And he wasn't quite clear of him when he moved across there. So that was a bit dodgy by Albuquerque. I don't think there was any contact. I think he might get a warning for that, but I don't think there'd be any penalty. But he was far enough ahead by the time they got to the braking zone, then super late on the brakes, and he regains that position. But it's a fabulous battle. And right behind the both of them, though, is Tom Blomqvist in the number 60 car for Meyer Shank Racing as well.
He's watching that and thinking, go on, lads, that's champion. I'll have a bit of this if you two tangle. At the top of the GTD Pro standings, what a success GTD has been, by the way. The debut race for that category, GTD Pro. The two Porsches are together going to the same part of the track. Turn six, turn left, up onto the banking. Speedway one and two. Unmistakable sound of the flat six in the background. That's the Faf car. As into the pits, the leader in LMP3, Alex Lynn on the pit lane. In fact, he's down and away in that number 74.
Felipe Fraga.
Excuse me, Felipe Fraga. Yes, got me.
So that'll bring the numbers 54 and 33
back onto the lead lap.
Yeah, he was the last car to make its most recent stop. So Felipe Fraga then still leads that car. That's the car that won this race last year, the LMP3 race here, and the overall championship. So there's another look at this battle.
Cracking run and a manoeuvre from Philippe Albuquerque and Tom Blomqvist having the battle for second and third. So Blomqvist getting ahead. Conway and Albuquerque having the battle. Conway getting ahead, and then as Jeremy described it, the blue and black Acura getting back to the lead of that little battle. That is the battle for second position. Let's go down to Rahal Letterman Lanigan and to the director of competitions, for president of competitions for that August organisation. That is Piers Phillips, who's with Joe Bradley.
now then, John, you may need a translator. A lad from Hexham talking to a lad from Sunderland. We'll try to not let our accents get in the way. Piers.
Sorry, what was that, John?
Exactly. Piers, it's not a race that you're going to look back on fondly, with lots of issues on pretty much all of the BMWs in the field.
I don't call them issues, I call them opportunities. But, you know, this is... it's been a development race for us. You know, the M4's relatively new, and, you know, racing in Europe and racing in America are two completely different things. And Daytona, she's a tough girl to master, you know. And I think it's just been one of those things, you know. The guys, the team have done an awesome job. The guys from Munich, you know, how they've reacted, how we've repaired and got on top of things. But it's been a challenge. But, you know, we're still in there fighting, and if we can... get one of the cars home in the top six, then that'll be a great result for us.
It's kind of an adage when we talk about early development of a new model of car coming in, and the issues with the rear diffuser, for instance, that's been across the full range, customer cars, your cars. Is that a good thing or a bad thing that these things manifest?
Well, it's a good thing to get on top of them early, yeah. You know. We think it might be more of a track-specific issue with that in particular, you know, curbs, bus stop, etc. It's never a good thing to have issues, but, you know, to get them early, get them in the first race and try and get ahead of that. And so the teams are aware, not just for us as RLL, but the customer teams, you know, and that's our mission this year, to help the customer teams try and win a championship.
Yeah, and so where do you go from here then? Give the listeners an idea. We talk about problems, we talk about development. What does that actually mean? Do you go back to the drawing board, so to speak?
Well, you can't necessarily go back to the drawing board on everything, because a lot of the cars homologated, but there'll be a substantial debrief on Tuesday when everyone gets back to Indianapolis. But, you know, myself and Brandon, who's the operational director, and Bobby, we're heading to Munich next week for meetings, you know, to discuss this and debrief and talk about the future. So it's a constant process, you know, and the bits that we can work on and try and make it a little bit more reliable, then we'll do that.
Mike Crack just left BMW. Off he goes to Formula One land. What would you say about... the man who got the LMDH program up and running?
Mike's absolutely fantastic. He's been a huge proponent of RLL, you know, and the working relationship between Munich and the US, because it's different, you know. A lot of people, you know, whether a European team coming to America or an American team going to Europe, they struggle, you know, because the cultures are different and how the teams work, etc. But, you know, he's a personal friend of pretty much everybody in the team, and obviously incredibly experienced, intelligent guy. And we're really, really sorry to see him leave. We're delighted that Andres Roos is coming in to take his place, because another, you know, fine individual with a huge pedigree behind him. So we're really looking forward to the future, you know, and it's not just good times for, you know, for the manufacturers and sports cars. It's great opportunities for these teams to expand and grow and operate at the highest level across the world.
Thanks, Piers. John, you'll be interested to know that I showed him a picture of Brody in his Newcastle scarf, and he was laughing for a good 5 to 7 minutes.
Yeah, he probably saw the result yesterday as well. Brody is Joe's grandson, and for some unknown reason, Joe's managed to allow him to be brought up a Newcastle supporter, which I think is a failure of grandparenting at the highest level, to be honest. Those of you who know about Northeast soccer rivalries will understand that more than most. Let's get back to the matter in hand, though. Top three heading down, second, third and fourth, all heading down to the newly named Le Mans Chicane knee bus stop with 2:20 to go, and the closest battle on the racetrack at the moment is for Mike Conway, Tom Blomqvist and Philippe Albuquerque, battling for second, third and fourth. Albuquerque just coming under us now and crossing the line. Here comes the pink Acura on the red and white number 31 round the outside to turn one. We've seen this time and time again. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. They're going to try and tough it out. Had to be a bit of give and take there. That was pretty harsh stuff for Tom Blomqvist, and he had to give best to Mike Conway. He wasn't giving up that position easily. That is allowing Philippe Albuquerque just to get away. There's 17 and a half seconds between Albuquerque and the leader, Richard Westbrook. Then just 1.3, 1.8 seconds between the other two. So Three cars in under 2 seconds at the moment, battling for steps on the podium. Only two teams at the moment can get that. The leader is away with 2:19. It sounds ridiculous seeing 17 seconds, but in the context, Jeremy, of what we've seen in this DPI field, you said in our countdown, Michelin countdown to green, and the Porsche keys to the race, any one of the seven DPIs could win. They've all led, genuinely, on pace, not just on pit stop rotation. Now, some have fallen by the wayside, absolutely, but we've got four cars, and quite obviously, there's only three spots on the podium here. It's time to go.
It's time to go. I mean, what a race this is turning out to be.
It's a classic.
And it kind of ebbs and flows. But, you know, that margin that number five car has over the number 10 right now, it's Cadillac versus Acura. Well, an Acura versus Cadillac versus Acura for second place. I mean, it's really tight. And we've seen margins like that change again. The straight line speed this time on the inside for the Cadillac as they head towards turn one. That's interesting.
And again, whoa, it's side by side. This is going to be tight again. Can the 31, Mike Conway, hold on? He comes off the corner and just gets over to the left-hand side before the pass can be made by Tom Blomqvist.
Big respect there for both of those two drivers. Mike Conway could have made life very, very difficult there for
and vice versa, actually.
To a slightly lesser degree, absolutely right. But hats off to both of them there, because either of them, as you say, could have made it difficult. And that was a just great side-by-side racing. And Mike Conway, he's super confident. He knows he doesn't need to do anything silly. He can just drive as hard as he can. Twice a world champion, as you suggested.
Yeah.
As you say there, John Hindhoff, with the Toyota team in the World Endurance Championship. So huge amount of experience in sports cars. Loves driving this 24 hours here at the Rolex 24 at Daytona. And, he doesn't need to resort to any underhand tactics to keep somebody behind him.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Two different manufacturers, of course, and the car up the road is another Acura. So Mike Conway doesn't want to be chasing two Acuras down. That has come down by about a second.
Yeah, for quite a while it was after the most recent round of pit stops, it was about 18 seconds. It's down to 16 now between first and second, but really that's just ebbing and flowing in traffic. Plus on that last lap with that battle between Mike Conway and Tom Blomqvist, that's allowed Alpe Gruyt just to pull away a little bit and focus forward just a bit. He's now maybe a couple of seconds behind that other pair. But this is just really exciting stuff. And the last pit stop, the car that will lead the pit stop sequence first in is going to be the number 31 car, I would suggest, probably in about three laps time.
See, the good thing about endurance racing is it breaks down cultural, religious, national barriers. As Ben Stevenson has said, nothing wrong with supporting the black and white team in the northeast as long as they enjoy endurance racing. They're all good in my eyes. Can't disagree with that. Really can't. Is it me, says Steve Tabman, or is the wing element on the Acura noticeably flatter with a less of an angle of attack in comparison to the Cadillac? Could be. They are certainly quicker in a straight line, Steve, at IMSA Radio. If you want to get in touch with us in the Haggerty Global broadcast booth, still to come after the race, the checkered flag, end of the competition, start of the conversation. Hashtag Michelin PRT for the matters arising in what has been, even thus far, a fascinating race with still 2.25 hours to go. We won't leave you hanging at the end of this one. Plenty of interviews. Jeremy's already got the abacus out to do the arithmetic in this battle for third position. At the moment, it's Mike Conway round the top side this time for the Acura of Tom Blomqvist. Underneath our feet, down towards turn one. He's ahead. Can he get the car pulled into the apex? He can't because of the BMW there, but he'll use that as a bit of a pick. One either side of the 24 RLL BMW, and Blomqvist is back into third position. Well, there's no quarter asked or given here. What I'm seeing here, Jeremy, is now the drivers have been let off the leash. It is now absolutely full bore to the end.
Have you not been watching the last 21 and a quarter hours, John? It's been like this the whole way through.
True. But you know what I mean.
Yeah,
it's becoming more aggressive out there, both in attack and defence. At the head of the field, Richard Westbrook is 15 seconds. It was 17 seconds.
Was 18
a couple
seconds.
Of 18 seconds, yeah, a couple of or three laps ago. So he, at the moment, is being allowed to soft pedal in that car. He's not having to take any risks through traffic.
Yeah, we're going to see what, you know, they've been doing 32 lap stints recently in these cars, recent stints. Before that, generally, it was 21 laps. So we'll see what these stints are now. I think they might well be down to 21 if they need to up the pace a little bit. But again, yeah, we're 2 hours and 14 minutes to go.
Down here in the Michelin pit box, it's a nice place to be, nice and shaded all the way down at pit exit with Tony Menard, president of Michelin North America. Now, Tony, everybody was really worried coming into the race about the cold temperatures overnight. No issues. Everyone behaved themselves. Is that a surprise to you at Michelin as well?
A little bit, honestly. And on Friday, I met Mr. France, and he asked me one single question. Say, weather should be very cold during the night, and your tires will be okay. And say, I think so, Mr. France. And I met him this morning, and the first thing he told me, said, thank you. That was great. So now we... we knew that we were able to do it, but I think, and we have launched in parallel, you know, a kind of research in our books, because I am not sure that we have ever raced during 8 consecutive hours with such low temperature ever. So we'll check. And so we didn't know in advance. We knew that the tire we have chosen has a window of temperature and operating condition that was quite wide, but that was a part of a big question mark. So, well, we did everything we have to do. We were extremely cautious. We checked the maximum of tires. We, of course, asked the teams to follow recommendation in terms of pressure. And it seems that it went well. We were at the lower we get was 31 on the air and 33 on the track, so which is really, really very cold. And that was good. So, but it's still 4 hours to go. Or the weather is better, but we still have a few things to perform.
That's excellent. We've got the leader in the pits really quick. I just want to call the stop as the number 5 Mustang sampling car is in. 4 new Michelin tires going on that car. Stickers, no driver change, fuel only. Looks to be going very smooth. Now, Tony, before the race weekend began, there was a minimum pressure that was mandated for all the teams. Do you think that that helped with the stability?
The pressure recommendation were the same than the year before. The fact is now IMSA is enforcing that. The most important thing when you join Michelin, and a long time ago, I remember that, is you learn is the most important part of the tire is the quantity of air you will put inside. And when we ask the team to follow recommendations, that's not to prevent them, you know, to go fast. This is the best usage they can do of our tires. And when you see that with our recommendation, the lap record, you know, has been beaten at 5 in the morning at the coldest time, you know, it shows that the advice are good. So we just have to choose and to follow them. So we are happy because that's a part of the results as well, to make sure that tires are well used according to our conditions.
Every car this weekend and last weekend running on one form of Michelin or another, with the Mazda MX-5 Cup also on BF Goodrich, how much does that swell the hearts of Michelin engineers everywhere to know that every tire has been a Michelin compound?
I think we are extremely happy, you know, and we are proud, because you never know in racing in advance what will happen. The weather conditions are changing. The number of cars is different, the track could be different, and I think every time having in this different class and series, teams coming back to us saying, oh, thank you, that was great. On the pilot challenge, one of the winners was extremely positive on the podium with us. So far, people are happy. So for teams, you know, in here, but as well, you know, in the industry, in the people who are helping us to make it possible, that's a kind of reward, I would say, saying, okay, we are doing our best. That's quite hard work, but it pays in return. And the most important thing is the satisfaction of our customers. Are you buying passenger car tires for your car, or are you the most professional team, you know, in the most demanding usages? We have the same expectation, and when the customer is happy, we are happy.
Well, speaking of customers being happy, when we come to the racetrack the next time for Super Sebring, you're going to have a lot more customers. Talk about the logistics for getting ready for that one.
I would say that for now, mid-20, when racing resumes in Daytona, by the way, in July 2020, we have anticipated a lot, because the situation is such that you don't know what will happen tomorrow, and that's still quite uncertain. And unfortunately, the logistic situation around the world is becoming really a nightmare. So we are doing our best. We have started to work for Sebring a few months ago. We are monitoring almost each day the containers, the tires, where are they, and so we will be prepared. But that's an additional workload. I can tell you I would love to spend less time on that, but we need to make sure that we have the right quantity of tires. And the good thing is, you know, if you look at today, you know, 61 cars. 3 months ago when we were discussing with IMSA, we were thinking about 49. So the number is increasing. That's a good sign. It means that the show, the racing is good. People are coming. Teams wants to be there. And somewhere, we think that our tires are playing a little part on that. So we're happy to prepare that.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to us. Everybody in the booth is asking after you. John says hi and enjoy the end of this race.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And just a little postscript to that, thank you, Shea, for that interview with Tony Menard, the man behind all of the logistics for Michelin competition here in the US. Michelin pivoted really quickly in its plants in Europe to switch from making tyres into making protection equipment for the early days of COVID. Well done to them for doing that. It's part of a really big effort by everybody in motorsport that saw people like McLaren and other engineering companies working on ventilator solutions and all that kind of stuff. I think we can be very proud of the part motorsport played in the last 2 years, and at the same time got back to the business of motor racing, particularly here in the US, very quickly indeed. Remember, we had a race here at Daytona 4th of July weekend 2020. So absolutely extraordinary stuff. 2 hours and 7 minutes to go. Joe Bradley and Shea Adam down in the pit lane for the run to the checkered flag and beyond. Jeremy Shaw, John Hindhoff in the booth. 7 minutes to the last 2 hours. Jeremy, you've been looking at the numbers, and at the front of the field, it's very close, but who's best off on the fuel mileage and the pit stop strategy? We said flexible strategy, the Porsche keys to the race in our Michelin Countdown to Green yesterday. Where does the advantage lie as far as you can see?
Most definitely with the two cars that are out in front at the moment, number 10 and the number 60, because they're pitting several laps later. Last time it was three or four laps, depending on which car, later than the number 31 and the number 5. They've already done three laps more. I would expect to see the number 10 car probably in this time around, which is 2 hours and 6 minutes to go. That's going to be a real stretch to get there on just two more pit stops. But if they can eke it out a bit, it's not totally beyond the realm of possibility at all. And I don't think the number 5, number 31 could do that. Whose is coming into pits right now?
This is the 10 for Conningham and Alta. This is the leader, Philippe Albuquerque, into the pit lane.
So this is a 22-lap stint for this car, 21 lap stint from number 5 when it came in a few laps ago.
Take a pit report from our pit reporters on the scene.
Just going to pop my head out and see what's happening at the number 10. It's wheel, John. Sorry, mate. I'm stuck in one of the boxes. You probably could see that better than I can.
Yeah.
The number 60 car should be in probably the next time around.
As usual, the Acura engine revved within an inch of its life. No driver change for tyres. Couldn't see if there were stickers. Might be able to as they go past you, Joe. They look brand new to me. They look brand new to me. 32 seconds stopped. Shea Adam saw the car go by. Were they sticker tyres?
Yeah, they were. And that's Ricky Taylor behind the wheel now.
Ricky Taylor probably to the end of the race. So there was a driver change there. My apologies. got the binos on it a tad too late, Jeremy. I think Ricky will probably do the last 2 hours. That'll be a triple stint, won't it?
Yes, absolutely. He hopes. And if yes.
Interesting comment from Wayne Taylor in the early hours of the morning that he felt the car was... The track was coming to the car and the conditions were coming. The car rather almost grudgingly accepted that they might have the pace for this because he's, you know, he's an old stager, doesn't want to show all the cards at the same time.
That's exactly right. And he always plays his cards close to his chest. But that car's been competitive all race long. Here, though, right on schedule, is the number 60 car. Again, a 22-lap stint for the number 60 car as well. Number 22, the 10 and the 31, all in 22 laps. Number 5, only 21 last time around in the pits.
Turn my mic on if I want to talk, and that again is the door open. Four tyres going on there as well, and that is a driver change there. Joe Bradley is the closest, but we'll check it as we go through. So out from the 10, Philippe Albuquerque. Who are you putting in again? There's the revving of the engine. Oh, and a little stumble there by one of our camera operators in the pit lane, but jumps up straight away. So hopefully okay there. And who's that share who's taking that one out? Let's see who it was coming through. Elio Castroneves, question mark. No, it is Tom Blomqvist out. Tom Blomqvist out of the car. And it was, see, it tripped the exit sensor. It's waiting for the Alcamel screen to update for me. Out he goes now. Well, says Tom Blomqvist. So, I wonder if they did that thing where a driver handed a new bottle in. I saw a helmeted driver by the car. Blomqvist was already in the car. So, if there was a driver change and Blomqvist got in, it wasn't Blomqvist before, if you see what I mean, according to the timing and scoring. Through goes the number 10. Ricky Taylor. So having stopped a lap earlier with some heat in the Michelins, the number 10 back to the lead of the motor race. Zero driver change at the 60. So it was just a driver handing the driver the bottle. It's one of those things that the driver is allowed as an extra person over the wall as a driver's assistant, but they have to be in their driving gear. So that saves one of the pit crew doing the fueling or the tyres from having to do two jobs. And that's why sometimes we can see a driver still, slight problem with the sun in our eyes here. All I saw was a helmet down there and thought, oh, there's been a driver change. Your apologies for misleading you on that. So the pit stops for the two Acuras completed. So that leaves Richard Westbrook in the lead of the motor race, and he's due in when? Oh, a while yet.
Oh, yeah, just
18 laps. Yeah,
he only pitted 6 laps ago. The number 5 car ran 1 lap less than the number 31 car on its last stint, so they are now pitting on the same lap. As per the previous stint, the number 60 and the number 10 car came in respectively at 5 and 4 laps later.
Yeah, so.
And that could be critical.
As I said, the lead in the Acura battle has gone to Conyngham and Alta Acura. They're in second. Tom Blomqvist staying in third. But Ricky Taylor getting in the number 10. That's the key thing there. He'll almost certainly go at the end. Mike Conway, 6 laps into his stint, which he stayed in the car as well after that pit stop.
And if I look at the gaps, John, since before the round of pit stops, it's the same order. Number 5 ahead of number 10, ahead of number 60, ahead of number 31. The number 60 having overtaken the number 31 right before the number 30, the lap before, one full lap before number 31 car came into the pits. So the gap between first and second was 14.7. It's now 18.6. The gap from the 10 to the number 60 was 4 seconds. It's now 2.2. And the gap from the number 60 to the number 31, well, they were pretty much tied together because they just had the overtake the lap before. There's 4 seconds between them at the moment. Of course, the 60 car is just getting up to speed. It's only done one out lap at this stage. So as a complete lap, 699, by the way. 1:35s are the sort of regular lap times for the leaders, and they're running remarkably consistently. That 19.3 the gap between first and second, 2.6 between each of the second and third and fourth place cars.
Jeremy Shaw and John Hindhoff in the Hagerty Global broadcast booth overlooking start finish line at Daytona International Speedway. Good morning if you are just joining us. 20 minutes before midday and into the final 2 hours. Sirius XM 202 RS2, IMSA Radio via www.imsaradio.com, 107.9 around the circuit and in sound and vision outside the US. And if your territory doesn't have a network TV deal, we've got pictures for you. And they'll go right through to the end of the race at imsaradio.com. The final 2 hours of racing is underway from Daytona.